Sunshine Meets.
Brought to you by Grafton Medical Practice, looking after Dubliners' health for over 25 years.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
A very good evening. You're listening to Sunshine 106.8. I'm Andrea Hayes. I hope you're having a lovely Sunday evening. Now, tonight we meet somebody who's played roles from saints to sinners. He's played every role, in fact, but it was the psychological thriller Sleeping with the Enemy that secured this Dubliner a place in Hollywood history as one of the most sinister villains to ever grace our screens. Sunshine meets writer, musician, and of course, actor Patrick Bergen. Patrick, you're so welcome.
Thank you very much.
It's lovely to have you in our Sunshine studio, but we always begin at the start. Can you tell us about the younger years of Patrick Bergen? You're from Dublin.
I was born in Hollis Street, and I was raised for a couple of years in Carlow. My mum and dad were living in Carlow. My mother was from Jerusalem, County Kildare, and my father became a senator. And he was a campaign organizer for the Labour Party and a senator. So we moved up and lived underneath Labour Party offices in Earlsford Terrace. I was there, I went to school in, apparently when I was four, I said to my mum, "Ma, I'm four. I want to go to school." And went to Loretta Convent there on Stephen's Green and for infants. Then we moved out to Drimna on, I remember it well, October the 31st, 1957, because it was Halloween. And that was the day when, that night when they asked me who I was, I became an actor and I said my name was Bernard McGuire. And I went to school in Drimna for about 6 years under that name until to do my primary. And my dad had to come up to school and said, his name is not Bernard McGuire. His name is Patrick Bergen.
Are you serious?
I know. It was a very strange time, but that's how it started.
And you've two other brothers?
I have, no, three.
Three? Three other brothers?
I've got Emmett, you know as Dick Moran and Glen Rowe, probably. And I've got a younger brother, Pierce, and the youngest is Alan. And I've got the eldest in the family is my gorgeous sister, Siobhan.
And as a family, Patrick, were you a close-knit family?
Very much so, yeah. We were very together. Siobhan left quite early, but I remember her. Imagine, she put me on her bike in Earlsford Terrace and cycled me to Port Marnock on the back of the bike. I would have been about, as I say, four, five, six or something. And we were just chatting about that the other day. I was down in Cork, and she lives in Clonakilty down that way. And Emmett, because of the acting and things like that, he was around, but he left Drimna quite early on and started working in the Abbey quite early on. And then Pierce was next, so we were quite close. I used to look after Pierce and Alan when my mum used to work in Butlins in Mosney. Mm. I worked there for a while as well. I was there as a trolley boy.
A trolley boy. Imagine Patrick Bergen, the trolley boy.
It was great. It was wonderful summers down there in Butlins. And yeah, so we were very close. Very close to everybody. And my dad was a wonderful character. Mm. And I had some very special moments with him on all levels. But we used to spend, because his name was Paddy as well, Patrick. We had a special day on Patrick's Day, of course.
And, naturally.
And we would go to the parade together. And then on Christmas, we used to go over to our lovely family and they had a pub in the Seven Stars, called the Seven Stars in Parnell Street. Mm-hmm. And all the family, he had six sisters. And Baby, who wasn't the baby because there was another one after her, surprise one after her, Colonia. But Aunt Kathleen, who was my favourite, I have to say, lived in New York, and she would send... Baby made the cake, but Kathleen would send over some presents.
From New York.
From New York.
When that arrives, the excitement across the Atlantic comes great gifts.
And occasionally a few dollars.
Oh, wow. And was there a lot of music growing up? Because was that love of music and entertaining and putting on a show always there?
Oh, well, I thought my dad was Elvis. There was pictures of Elvis. My mom was in love with Elvis. Mm. And she loved music very much so. And her she encouraged me in the music as well, and some of her songs. She was very fond of the Clancy Brothers, for example,
mm-hmm.
and she loved, because she was from Jerusalem, County Kildare, she loved the Curragh of Kildare. But when I was playing guitar, she'd always say to me, sing Brennan on the Moor.
So you were playing guitar quite early?
I did. I started quite young. I was about, 15, 16, mm-hmm. around that age. And I was beginning to get into Bob Dylan and some folk music and things like that.
I read a lovely line that your dad gave you great advice, and it was, all a man needs is a roof over his head, food on the table, and a rose in a vase. That yes. struck me.
Yes, he was a very philosophical man, my father, and very, very erudite. But he had a simple way about him also. He cut to the chase.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he said. He said there were three things a man needed. And when you were allowed to say things like that. A roof over your head, food on your table, and a flower in a vase.
Mm.
Of course, he said a rose, because the rose was symbol for the Labour Party.
Oh, I didn't think of that. But it was a lovely nurturing environment.
It was a spiritual life as well. The flower is sort of your spiritual life.
Mm. It was very interesting. And in terms of Emmett, and, you know, Patrick, were you kind of hot tickets around Drumna now when you were growing up? You both would have been known for your good looks, and were the other boys the same?
Thank you very much.
But Dick Moran was quite the character in Glenroe.
He was. Women love Dick.
Yeah, they do. They do. You're right. And still to this day. But both of you were into the acting. Was that something you both shared, or how did that unfold?
Well, I think it osmosed, really, more than anything else for me. But my father, because he was an organizer, and he led some very important political campaigns in Carlow with the sugar factory, etc. He was aware that his, we might call his compatriots, or his fellow workers, or his men,
mm-hmm.
With all due respect, could barely walk and talk at the same time. They're all farm laborers, etc., etc. So he formed a theatre in Carlow called the Little Theatre, which still exists, and to teach his workers how to walk and talk and have confidence in themselves. And I think Emmett was there. I wasn't aware of that at all. Mm. I was much too young for that. But so it was in the family in that sense. And Emmett took to it. And I remember joy of going to see Emmett in the Abbey and the Gaiety and places like that. My mother worked in the Gaiety.
Oh, I didn't
know. In the
know.
Green Room. Yeah, she did. And so it was part of the furniture, so to speak.
And it's an incredible, obviously, your life, as we all know it, you know, you went across to America and we all know the big Hollywood hit. But before that, speak me about some of the plays that you did and as a jobbing actor and working actor here in Dublin and in London as well.
Well, mainly in London. I suppose the one that my favourite was a Harold Pinter play. The birthday party. I played McCann, the Irishman, in the birthday party. And I toured almost the whole of England in what you'd call second division theatres, from Wells next to sea to Richmond in the Yorkshires, the oldest theatre in England. And I remember Johnny Murphy. It was there was a theatre around the corner which I did a few things in called the Falcon in Kentish Town.
Mm-hmm.
And one night, there was a Dublin play, Hatchet, was on there with Johnny Murphy. And this was a big break for me because I called up a mate of mine, Robbie Butner, who lived next door to Johnny in Drumna.
And Johnny, just for our listeners, played Lips, I think, in The Commitments.
That's him, yeah.
Yeah, that's the one.
Great actor.
Yeah.
Great character as well. And at the interval of that, I had pretenses, you see, now being an actor as well, but at the interval, Shane Connerton, who wrote the script for My Left Foot, not the book, obviously. And he came over to me and he said, are you an actor? And I said, yeah.
I am.
Of course. And he said he was teaching at the National Film and Television School in Beaconsfield in England.
Wow.
And he said one of his students was doing a film, an Irish film, for his end degree.
Mm-hmm.
And he thought I might be right for the role. Would I audition for it or meet the director? And I said, of course. Got the part. It's probably the best thing I've ever done, a little half-hour comedy. And on the strength of that, I was playing music. Mm-hmm. I used to go up to Norway with a friend of mine, Mick Flynn, from the wonderful Nick Flynn. I can't even begin to talk about him. He's so much to talk about him. And he and I went up to Norway. We used to go up with an agent called Ann Dex. Mm-hmm. And we'd go up for a month and play 4 40-minute sets every night, 6 nights a week.
In Norway?
In Norway, yeah. I made good money and we were put up in hotels and it was great. Mm. And when she saw the little half-hour thing, she says, oh, you should show that to Evan. And I said, who's Evan? Evan Dunstan was a theatrical director across the way. And he saw it and he took me onto his books. And I haven't stopped working since.
An agent. When you get an agent, you've landed as an actor. How did you go then from London to America?
Well, that was, again, the music, in a sense. The Bob Rafelson, who was probably most famous for his collaborations with Jack Nicholson, he invented the Monkees. Mm-hmm. And he did King of Marvin Gardens, Five Easy Pieces, and all those films with Jack Nicholson. He was in London auditioning for a film called Mountains of the Moon. Mm-hmm. And I was working as a musician, if you like, in a place called Minogue's in Islington. And to cut a long story short, it was a great place. It was one of the first themed Irish bars in London. And but they had kedgeree on Sundays. Anyway, I went into... I was through Andex and through Evan Dunstan. I had a meeting with the agent who was the casting agent. And she said, we know you. You play in Minogue's on Sundays, don't you?
Really?
And I said, yeah. And they said, oh, you can go in and see Bob. Of course we let you see Bob. And I went and met Bob Rafelson. And it took a long time to convince him, but... he and Ian Glenn with me until Ian Glenn and I were narrowed down to the potential two, and he still didn't commit until Ian, to his credit, said, or get off the pot.
And we're going to talk about that. Let's take a bit of music now. Okay. And we're choosing the Clancy Brothers and we're dedicating it to your mum. Tell us why.
Well, she loved the Clancy Brothers. And as I said, she said, always wanted me to sing Brennan Undermore. She thought she loved the action. But she also loved the Curra of Kildare. She was a big fan. She loved music. I mean, probably more favourite of hers would have been Elvis or something. But I'd like you to play something for by the Clancys.
It's of a brave young highwayman, this story we will tell. His name was Willie Brennan, and in Ireland he did dwell.
Sunshine Meets.
Brought to you by Grafton Medical Practice, looking after Dubliners' health for over 25 years.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
You're very welcome back. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Sunshine Meets with myself, Andrea Hayes. And tonight, we're chatting to one of Dublin's most famous actors, but he's also a singer and a writer. Sunshine Meets the wonderful Patrick Bergen. Now, Patrick, we were chatting just briefly about going over to America. We have to talk about Sleeping with the Enemy because I was surprised myself that when it was released, it grossed 175 million. And that was based on a production of 19 million. And it broke all of the box office hits at the time, and it surpassed Alien even at the time. So this was massive. But before we talk about that, tell us about the audition. How did a young Drimna actor who was singing in Minogue's get to see one of the big agents over in America?
Well, it was via the Mountains of the Moon, and it was at the premiere of Mountains of the Moon in New York. A man called Joe Roth, who had who was the head of 20th Century Fox, was at the screening, and he, dare I say it, at the end of the film, he went to the people who the publicity people, the girls, and they said, "Do you think Patrick is sexy?" And they said, "Yes." Thank God. And he approached me and said, would I come to L.A. to meet regarding a film that they were producing, Sleeping with the Enemy. So I was delighted and went to L.A. It was my first time, I think, maybe in L.A. And So I eventually went to meet them, and I was aware of the character and the type of person he was. So I dressed in my, I call it my nine-piece suit, and with overcoat and fawn and all of that, the business. I went in to meet a table full of
casting directors.
Executives of 20th Century. It was Andy, a director, of course, as well. And they asked me a lot of questions, and I stoically got through them all. And they said, oh, well, thank you very much, Mr. Bergen. Thank you, Patrick. And we'll be in touch. I stood up and went to leave and opened the door and walked straight into the broom closet.
The broom closet. I mean, you couldn't write that.
But the director, Joe Rubin, said to me later that my reaction to coming out of that broom closet was what got me the part.
And what was the reaction, Patrick?
Probably astute embarrassment and concealing it.
So you have this part, and did you know Julia Roberts? I mean, obviously she was in Flatline and Pretty Woman.
I wasn't aware of her work at that stage. Pretty Woman was just had been a hit just before Sleeping with the Enemy was released. That summer, I think it had been a big hit. So I was, you know, by the time we were filming, I certainly knew who she was. But I wasn't aware of Flatliners, for example. I hadn't seen that. She was wonderful to work with. She was dating Kiefer Sutherland at the time, I think. And we had, it was a tough, long shoot, but it was pleasant as well. We were out at, in North Carolina, in Wilmington. And a lot of people don't know the house that everybody, is almost a character in the movie. That was a prop.
Oh, really?
Yes.
It was a set,
yeah, because they had a house they wanted to use, but they felt that the locals, it was on an island, it's just off North Carolina, and they thought that if there was any trouble, the locals could have blocked the bridge or something. They felt vulnerable anyway, and so they built that beautiful house, and we were there for 8 weeks filming.
And I was surprised to read that Julia Roberts was only 23 when she got that part. And apparently Kim Basinger had been attached to it initially, I'd heard.
And, well, the initial casting was going to be Sean Connery.
And Jane Kim Fonda. There was a few names that were...
Probably.
And they were really quite particular about the casting on it. And they wanted the right people for it, is what I read. And Julia was very young. She was 23. And for her at the time, you know... Are you a method actor? Did you become friends with her? How did you kind of create that, you know, those intense scenes? How did you deal with that?
Well, you've hit the truth there. In fact, we had lunch, I think, once or twice. And then when it started to get serious, I would be invited for lunch with her and Kiefer, for example. And I pulled away. I did the method thing.
Mm.
And I didn't really want to be friendly with her. I wanted to have that sort of cold... feeling towards her. It was part of the process, if you like.
And that intrigues me, that method acting, because for her, you know, being young, do you feel, obviously you're working, it's your job, but you have to really distance yourself so there can't be any friendship. It's really about the work for you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's you have to do whatever is necessary to tell the story.
Mm.
I mean, I've got one other, going back to the Mountains of the Moon, which got me the film in a sense. When I was at the method thing, and I was coming up to, it was in north of Kenya, Lake Turkana. And I had a big scene in the afternoon, very serious. So I thought, let's skip lunch and go for a walk out into the wilderness to get myself calm and centered. And 20 minutes out into absolutely nothing out there, maybe the odd acacia tree. And out of the haze was standing a 7-foot Turkana warrior with a spear. Oh, my God. And he gestured with his finger, called me forward. I went, and he said to me, "Where are you from?" And I said, "Ireland." And he said, "Where?" And I said, "Ireland." And then he looked over his shoulder, his left shoulder, and he looked over his right, and he brought me in closer. And he said, "Are you still having problems with the Catholic Protestants?"
What did you think he was going to say?
No idea.
I'm sure that was the last thing on your mind.
Like collapsed in laughter.
Oh, and laughter is very much part of you. You have a wicked sense of humour.
Thank you.
You know, that laugh that you have, it's quite infectious. It's a bit of a dirty old laugh that you have there.
I got it in Drimna.
You got it in Drimna. Well, you've kept it very well. Now, when the movie was finished and it went to the box office, had you or anybody attached to it had the expectation it was going to be just as big as it was?
No idea whatsoever, except that, I mean, it was obviously on the back of the success of Pretty Woman.
Mm-hmm.
It inevitably got a lot of attention, and it was an extraordinarily well-made film. Joe Rubin is a brilliant, brilliant director.
Mm.
And we didn't expect it. You never know.
Mm.
But it seems to have tapped into a nerve and to a truth, if you like. And it has stood the test of time. I occasionally get students now who set up screenings and ask me to come and talk about it, because it is a classic. Joe really, really worked on his biggest influence was Hitchcock.
Mm, film noir.
Yeah, he has it. And so it almost looks like a black and white film, doesn't
it? Totally. It's shot in such a unique manner and fashion, mm-hmm. and I can see that Hitchcock influence. Speaking of influence, though, you had a huge influence on it, and Joe trusted you with the music, with the words. Tell us a little bit about some of the things that you did.
He asked me, because the music is quite important in the film.
Like a character, actually.
Exactly. And he asked me what piece of music I suggested it instantly, Symphony Fantastique by Berlioz. Because at that time, it was one of my favourite pieces.
Mm.
And he used it, and it really works. And the other thing, in terms of script, I remember there was a very big scene towards the end of the film. And, you know, there's a great script written by Bruce Joel Rubin, who is an Oscar-winning writer, et cetera, et cetera. But there was a speech at the very end of the movie when the character comes back, Martin comes back and meets with Laura. And he has this long speech about how he had done this for her and done that for her and blah, blah, blah. Went on page after at least 2 pages long.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to Joe, I'm having real problems with this, keeping up the intensity for that length of time. And he said, well, what would you say, Patrick? I said, I would say, I can't live without you. And I won't let you live without me.
And they are, those two lines, even hits a nerve as you say it now to me. That was just summing up that man.
Yes. And he called Joe, Bruce Joel Rule. put these in the script.
Yeah. But isn't it amazing that was that ensemble? And it's lovely to have it work with people that are willing to have that ensemble and trust the actors to have that input.
I think, I mean, I've been very fortunate. I mean, I've made a lot of films, but I've been very blessed.
Over 140, which I was surprised to read.
Oh, my God.
Because people probably don't know this about you, but stateside, when cable TV were coming out, you were you starred in, and they were huge, those cable movies.
Yeah, it was a phenomenon that happened and in the early 90s the cable channels emerged, and their promise was to have a new movie every week. That's 50 movies a year.
Can you imagine?
And so there was 3 or 4 of those cable channels initially. It probably was eventually more, but there was about 3 or 4 then. So that's 150 films a year that had to be made.
Woohoo for the actor.
And I did half of them.
Which is incredible. Now, there's so many other things, like there's Robin Hood, Patriot Games, but we're going to have
Dracula.
That's why I say you actually played Saints to Sinners. You played St. Patrick as well,
yes.
Everybody knows you as the villain, and you played Jesus.
And I played Jesus, yeah.
I mean, I'd love to talk more about that, but we're going to play a bit of music, and it's a Bob Dylan song. Tell us why you've chosen Bob Dylan.
Well, I he was the first one that really, really blew my mind away in terms of, you know, from the protest to which we were young, you know, students and things, protesting, for want of a better word. And then he developed into a wonderful album, Blonde on Blonde album. And he was gaining and matured. The subject matter became more involved. And the passion and complexity of relationships began to emerge in my life as well.
Mm-hmm.
And Dylan's song, Just Like a Woman, for example, is just so tender and truthful and complex. It's not clear. It sums up a relationship, really.
Sunshine Meets.
Brought to you by Grafton Medical Practice, looking after Dubliners' health for over 25 years.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
You're very welcome back. You're listening to Sunshine 106.8 at Sunshine Meets. And tonight, I'm very lucky. I'm talking to somebody we probably all know as a villain, a very sinister character on television and on movies. But it is, of course, the wonderful writer, actor and musician and Dubliner, Patrick Bergen. Now, Patrick, very briefly, people would have recently seen you, I suppose, in EastEnders. And again, another villain, a very menacing character. And they've left it open for you to return because he hasn't died, or he hasn't, you know, nothing has happened. What was it like going into Soapland and being again catapulted across not just England but Ireland, but really kind of getting your star up there again? Because I know you're kind of a quiet, private person.
Well, I had a little taster with Red Rock here, which I enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the producer of that who saw the opportunity for me to take on this role in EastEnders. And I enjoyed it immensely. It was great fun. And of course, it's almost being back in the family, isn't it? I mean, it's been around for so long. From the Dirty Den times, as I remember when I used to watch it. And so it was an honour to be there, and it was intriguing to be there. It was like being in your granny's.
Ah, and it was great as well, just the type of, he's an old school villain, as you said, so it was a good character to play.
And it was charming. He was, and it was sort of the East End. I've spent a lot of time in London, so I knew the East End as well. And those type of characters.
Mm.
So it was very easy for me to slip into it. And I enjoyed it.
And there's been so much, in terms of your acting, the painting by numbers, but it's naught to 10, is it?
Well, no, what I remember sitting around on sets, you mm-hmm. spend a lot of time, and I remember I think it was with Ian Glenn, in fact, we were chatting away one day and saying, there's this thing called painting by numbers.
Mm-hmm.
I said, this is not rocket science, mate, you know. There should be a course on acting by numbers. And that stuck with me, mm-hmm. my own idea. And I invented this course called Acting by Numbers 0 to 10.
Mm.
And it starts with 0 because it's the hardest. It's to be able to do nothing.
Mm. And that's the most intriguing, because it's often when you're doing nothing on film that people then think of, what is he thinking? And then they create their own narrative.
There you go.
And it's very interesting.
Yes.
But most people overact and they leave nothing to the imagination.
Exactly.
Mm. I'd love you to do that more about that. I think you should be doing more of that. And would you consider, because I know you do an awful lot of stuff for students and you help people out and everything, would that be something you'd like to get involved in, maybe?
Well, I have done it a little bit. I did some students down in Kilkenny asked me to come down and do it there. I did it down there just recently. And, it's something that I will hopefully in the future take around, because it does get a very good response.
Mm.
And I think people, including myself, continue to learn from it. It's a very, very interesting way in. It sort of demystifies the process.
Of acting.
Yeah.
And
number one is... breathe.
Just breathe. And if you're not breathing, you're certainly not acting. Now, there's so many things I want
to
talk about.
To say to him,
I don't. What is
your mom died? What did I die? What did you die of? I said to him. He said, "He died. Everybody dies of. What's that? Lack of breath."
I know. Which is, do you know what? Do you know what's something about breathing? We take it for granted. We don't ever question that the next breath is going to come.
Exactly. I remember, and you're in breathing is your spirit. Mm. Word for spirit and breath are the same thing. So you find your own spirit through your breathing.
I know. I totally agree. And I could go into that, but I won't, because everybody wants
another
to talk
time.
About another time. We'll have you back
and
on.
You've got that wonderful book that out, haven't you?
Yes. That Mind, Body, Soul, that you very kindly said was a spiritual file of facts. Thank you very much for reading it.
Brilliant.
You're so good. And that's the generosity of your nature is something that you're very well known for. Even with your music, a story I read was that the great Shane McGowan from the Pogues gave you a little bit of advice one time. God, how did that even happen, and how did you become friends with
him?
Well,
we used to hang out in Camden Town. You know, I used to live in Camden Town, and it was a pretty wild. And I started a session in the Good Mixer in Camden Town. And he'd be around, and we'd end up in the Mogadon, or the Marathon, as it was called. Nicknamed opposite the roundhouse there in Camden Town.
Yeah.
And one night he said to me, "Patrick, you drink too much."
Did he really?
Yeah.
And did you take that to heart? Or
I did. I eventually paid attention to it.
And yourself and Shane are good friends. Is it true you've written something, your music?
I've got a song that I wrote that I'm hoping that he might. I've managed to get it to him, but he hasn't recorded it yet, called Keeper Hill. As long as I can see Keeper Hill, I'm okay.
And let's talk about your writing, because people might have known you of late for a lot of the music that you're doing, but they think it's something new. But as we've heard on the whole show, you've had music in your heart since you were a child, and it's something that continued throughout your whole career, and it's kind of another passion.
Absolutely, and I'm involved now in a very big project, which is going to be done Easterish time in Cork. I found a script, and I've developed a script called The Blarney Stone.
The Blarney Stone, I love it.
Written by Tomás McDonagh's brother, John.
John.
And I found it in a drawer in a community centre in Clochjordan.
You did not?
I did.
And what was it about the Blarney Stone that you thought, I'm going to invest my time and energy, and what was it that you saw in this script?
Well, the mere fact that it was there, and it's never been produced, it's never been performed.
Mm-hmm.
So that was it. And the way I found it was just extraordinary. So that was the inspiration, just having it. And I just finished doing a musical down in Macroom called Murdered Shandy Hall with the wonderful actors and singers down there. And the lady who's in charge of the place down there, she was looking for product, and lo and behold, here I found one.
The Blarney Stone. So you're going to be kind of casting that soon, and we'll hear about it?
We're casting that as we speak.
Oh,
so
exciting.
If anybody with wonderful voices are willing to go to Macroom, we had a casting session on Sunday, and we probably have one more.
You'll have to give what's the website that they should go to?
Oh, gosh.
PatrickBergen.com or something like that, and they'll find out all there. But, you know, we can mention that at the end.
Yeah.
But you know what I'm interested in? From the likes of Julia Roberts, I mean, Uma Thurman, Harrison Ford, all of these big names,
yeah.
And then you're equally as happy to work in a small place, maybe down in Macroom. What is it about the work that you choose? Does it have to resonate with your heart?
To me, all art, if you like, is storytelling.
Mm.
And if something tells a good story, and I feel I can fit into that story, that's what gives me my passion and my interest.
And is song and songwriting...
And songs are... If you can tell a story in 3 minutes, it's much better than 2 hours.
But I was just going to say
what a song is.
And it's a harder form of the art.
It's a higher form.
Higher form, indeed. And in terms of your writing, if you were to kind of pick anywhere to sing, is there any particular stage or somebody you'd like to sing across? Because you've had great kind of collaborations in the last year.
Well, I've been very lucky. I've done Carnegie Hall.
You have?
I'm practicing.
That's incredible. Tell us about that and how that came about.
Bowl. I've done quite a few of them. Beg your pardon?
How did that come about, Carnegie Hall?
It was. I was in the Caribbean, and a guy called John, who was roadieing for the Dubliners, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
And beg your pardon, the Chieftains. And they were doing a St. Patrick's Day, and they asked me to read some poetry with them at Carnegie Hall. So I was able to do that.
That's incredible. Yeah. And then the Pope. We have to talk about the Pope.
Oh, my God.
Very few
oh my
people,
God, the Pope.
I know. The Holy Father. How does one Patrick Bergen get to sing with the Holy Father? I think it was with the Rish Choir, wasn't it?
It was with the Rish, yeah.
Incredible.
It was just, again, a great honour to be asked to do that. I had worked with some of the people before, so they were aware that I was in that arena.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a big Leonard Cohen fan myself, so it's hard to say exactly how it happened, but it was happening. And it was a bit like that even on the day, because the Pope, was a little late, mm-hmm. and then yet the timing ended up being perfect. And it's what you were saying earlier, it's just a little bit of magic.
And it was divine timing, because literally as the Pope arrived, you were the one that kind of sung him into the...
My mom would have been very proud of me.
Oh, your mum and your dad, indeed, would be very proud. You seem very happy now, and you mentioned the advice that, you know, Shane gave you. You're living a very happy life, you're happy with your situation. What's the secret to the happiness?
Well, I'm involved with a lovely lady, Helen Golden, and I'm lovely... people around me, and I'm working, and I'm getting fit and healthy, and staying centered, and just doing my best to be a good boy.
And well, what's interesting is when you do what you love, which is the music, and I mean, even the music, you were just in South Africa filming again.
Yeah,
tell
we
us
were
about
down
that
South
project.
Africa. It was great. Oh my God, Johannesburg. It's a very interesting place, and it's tough. We've got to be very careful here in Dublin as well. Everywhere, it can get very tough on the streets. And knives and drugs and people beating each other up and hating each other. You know, I think I'm an old hippie. We should all love each other. Love your neighbour.
Love your neighbour. Love comes out in the soul. So 2019 is going to be very exciting. You have, not only do you have the new movie that's going to be coming out, there's new music constantly coming out. You're doing a play, and will you be spending a bit more time in Ireland? You never know, EastEnders could come back again.
You never know. But no, I'm back and forth. I always say that I have the Bergen, not the Bermuda Triangle, the Bergen Triangle.
The Bergen Triangle.
Yeah. Which is basically, call it London, Dublin and LA.
London, Dublin, LA. Not a bad life going between the three, you know. It's been such a pleasure, but this is even more of a pleasure. We're going to end on a Patrick Bergen song. Tell us a little bit about your writing and some of the songs that you love and that you know, that have a special place in your heart.
Well, I've written as many songs as I've done movies. I've written a couple of hundred songs, I think, over the years. And but there are some that I think are particularly nice and good, obviously. I'm very honoured that you would play one.
Sunshine.
I'll leave it up to you.
Oh my goodness, what an honour. Sunshine has just met the incredible actor, writer and just all round perfect man and perfect guest, Patrick Bergen.